Moncrief on News Talk.
Are we now living in a world where real life is more bizarre than any satirical depiction of it? If, say, you're a newspaper cartoonist, how do you deal with that? Martin Rowson has been eviscerating public figures with his cartoons in The Guardian for over the past four decades. Martin, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Sean.
Has it changed for you over the years?
Well, it's changed a certain amount, and it happened about 10 years ago. Excuse me. And it was when suddenly you realised that the politicians had caught up to the fact that we should not have a monopoly on taking the mickey out of them. And if you notice this about Trump, but also about Boris Johnson, they are actually funny. Or they try to be funny. Trump is actually much funnier than Boris Johnson, who is not really, is a Tory's idea of funny. But the reason why people vote for Trump to a large extent, I've discovered this from my American son-in-law, is because they think he's funny. They think he's a laugh. And what he does is he realizes he can get things done by being in control of the humor agenda. So people are laughing with him rather than at him. But of course, the other thing about Johnson and Trump is that they're both narcissists and they hate people laughing at them. And so it appears to be impossible. I was at an American cartoonist convention in 2017 and they were trying to work out how the hell can we satirize this guy? Because he is always doing things which we could never make up in a million years. But then they realize that he actually, his skin is microns thin, that he actually hates it. But by the same token, David Quantick, the scriptwriter of The Thick of It, I don't know if people over there remember when Theresa May had a truly disastrous conference speech at the Tory Party conference in 2018, where she got a frog in her throat, somebody gave her a P45, and then the words fell off the set. And, you know, the name of the party itself actually fell off the set. And I said to David, you know, if you were having a script conference, at what point would you say this is beyond the bounds of possibility or believability? He said, we wouldn't have had the words falling off the set. People would say that could never happen. And we'd just watch it happen.
Yeah. but I suppose, and correct me if I'm wrong, more than 10 years ago, I suppose the purpose of satire in general, cartoons in particular, was to kind of take what they were saying, kind of nudge it slightly so that perhaps people could see through the hypocrisy or the silliness of a particular stance or a statement. But now it's more difficult to do that, partially because the world is so divided along these lines.
Yeah, and they're doing stuff, as I said, you would never make up. The great Jonathan Swift, on a good day, could not have made up the BSE crisis, you know, the mad cow disease crisis, where the Brits, I apologize for this, we took our national dish through incompetence, we rendered it poisonous but likely to drive you mad first, and then we went into a trade war with our closest trading partners to make them eat our national dish so it would drive them mad. Now, as I said, Jonathan Swift could not have made that up on a good day. And, you know, in my book, he's the greatest satirist who ever lived.
But I suppose nowadays, then, is the function, has the function slightly changed in that it's not aimed, if you like, at the ordinary consumer or the ordinary reader who goes, well, that was funny, and that actually might make me think as well, because you either love, say, Trump or you despise him. So for the people who despise him, you're not telling them anything they don't know already. For the people who love him, you're just winding them up.
Yeah, that's more or less it. and in fact, it always has been. You know, I have, over the last 40 years, I've worked for every national daily newspaper over here, except for The Sun, who never asked me. I also used to work for the Sunday Tribune in Dublin in the 90s. I had hours and hours of fun doing that, I can tell you, with Charlie Hockey and the rest of it. But the purpose of satire isn't to actually reform the person you're satirizing, or even to make them feel uncomfortable so they might change their ways, because they won't, because they're sort of narcissists and, you know, megalomaniacs. It's actually to comfort the reader, to actually think, well, I am licensed to laugh at this person because this cartoonist has drawn them in this particular way, doing this ridiculous thing. And as George Orwell famously observed, every joke is a tiny revolution because it diminishes the power of the people in power.
Yeah. And I suppose it's also something of a comfort that at least you can do this.
Yeah, absolutely. A few years ago, I interviewed a dissident Chinese cartoonist, the guy who in fact first drew President Xi as Winnie the Pooh. And as a consequence, you know, he is a non-personage. He lives in Australia now, he's in exile. And he had to go around with his wearing a face mask before it became fashionable in 2020. So they wouldn't use their facial recognition technology on him in order to get at his family who were still in China. And I finished the interview by saying, look, how does it make you feel knowing that you've deprived a quarter of humanity from the opportunity of following the adventures of the honey-loving little bear, a very little brain, because you drew President Xi as Winnie the Pooh? And he looked slightly puzzled. So, well, let's put it another way. How does it make you feel knowing that the second most powerful man on Earth is frightened of you? Mm. And he said, that makes me feel great.
People you've depicted in cartoons, have they ever contacted you? Have they ever threatened to sue you?
We're very lucky in Britain and in Ireland because we have a shared tradition of cartooning as a part of the political conversation, which actually goes back to the late 17th century. You know, it's been part of the political discourse for over 300 years, and you'd have to be a really naive or cynical politician to actually start objecting to it. Because first of all, you admit you have no sense of humor. You take yourself too seriously and all the rest of it. There was an Irish politician who once tried to sue me, but he was dissuaded. No British politician would, I think, complain about a cartoon because the worst thing that the Brits can be accused of is having no sense of humor, although many of them have no sense of humor at all. So in that way, we can behave with totally responsibility. Though, of course, it's become more and more difficult because there are so many people out there waiting to be offended over the slightest thing. As I said to one of your colleagues yesterday when we were talking about doing this interview, you know, I have been receiving death threats for 40 years. Wow. I mean, actually, no, I've been receiving death threats in a more concentrated way for the last 25 years, thanks to the wonders of the internet. But of course, it's just some bored kid in his bedroom in his mum's house in Milwaukee who's feeling bored and decides he's going to threaten to kill me. I know he doesn't own a passport and doesn't know where I live, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Still, though, is that something you get used to? Or do you have any way of parsing, well, that might be a serious death threat?
I think you can tell the proper real ones. But as we know, you know, on the internet, it's just constantly filled with people screaming gibberish because they think it's happening inside their heads. They don't realize it's actually there. It's been published and it's there forever. And it's very hard to actually excise any of that. But, you know, that's the nature of humanity. It is, thank God, making a lot of tech bros very, very rich. So with that comforting thought, you know, we can move on together.
Yes, of course, that's the main thing, really. Do you have, of all the people that you would regularly depict, do you have, if you like, a template for how you're going to depict them? And does that change over the years?
Well, yes, actually, because you, after a while, you have a cast of characters, which is actually quite limited because you need to be able to know that the readers will be able to identify this person. So, you know, introducing a new character is quite hard because you've got to get the template right. You've got to get your take on it. And there have been a couple of politicians, or Ed Miliband, for example. Mm. We all looked over each other's shoulders to see how you could draw Ed Miliband. And I hadn't quite got Ed Miliband right for about 2 years until I realized that his nose was a different shape in profile to the way it was full face. And then I had him. You see what I mean? They do develop. I mean, in the case of Tony Blair, I actually... when he resigned, I've actually got it on my wall, there's a picture of him as Dorian Gray. So there's this sort of wizened, rotting figure looking at the boyish, Bambi-ish Tony Blair of 1997. But from 2005, 2006, he was completely sort of gaunt and harassed because of the way it takes it out of you. And also with Trump. Trump in 2016 was orange and fat. Now he looks terrible. I mean, he can't even get the orange makeup over his jowls. So there's sort of this pink, pale flesh underneath the orange makeup. So I think you should change the way you draw people to reflect how they change in real time, which of course they do.
Has the orange changed, by the way? You paid some attention to this.
Well, it hasn't changed yet, because when he got re-elected, I ordered it in bulk.
What shade of orange is it?
Well, it's actually Cadmium Yellow Deep in the Winsor & Newton range.
There you go.
There you go.
Donald Trump's fashion tips there and everything. Martin, lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much for doing so.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.